Welcome to Windrush What's Next? The Struggle for Justice, a brand new broadcast series which has been commissioned by the Black Cultural Archives to examine the aftermath of the Windrush scandal. This entire series was recorded and produced during lockdown and is funded by the Paul Hamlin Foundation. I am your host, Sinai Flary, and this series is dedicated to all Windrush survivors and the late Windrush campaigner, Paulette Wilson.
Windrush, what's next? The struggle for justice in memory of Paulette Wilson.
In this episode, we will be speaking about racial inequality, Black Lives Matter, British citizenship, and what this all means for our identity and those still affected by the Windrush scandal within our families and communities. Joining me to shed some light on this and so much more is Dawn Hill, who is the current chair of the Black Cultural Archives, and later I will be speaking to Michael Braithwaite, Windrush campaigner and survivor.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Black Cultural Archives?
The Black Cultural Archives was the brainchild of Len Garrison back in 1981 or even before that, but we became an organization since 1981. I was asked to help him to sort of make the organization run, and I sort of did this in a voluntary basis, and I've been with the BCA for over 30 years now. The BCA is the home of Black history and culture. It is the only such repository in the UK. BCA's mission is to collect and promote, educate, and celebrate the living experience of people of African diaspora from Africa and the Caribbean communities in the UK. So we have education programs for school children. We have researchers coming in to use our archives. We have adult education. We have exhibitions, and we have a bookshop and a cafe. And we try and provide services to give the opportunity for the history of Black people to be known, not only from the Black people, but that the indigenous population also can learn about Black history.
There's been a lot of talk over the last few months after the Black Lives Matter protests about the importance of Black history and also the call to decolonize the curriculum and to have more Black British history put on the curriculum. Is this something that you would like to see happen?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, the BCA stands for educating on Black history, and we've campaigned over the years to have history of Black peoples to be included in the curriculum. I'm just so pleased that we now have the other organizations that are now campaigning for this, and we'll be working with those organizations to actually ensure that Black history is actually introduced properly into the curriculum, because British history, Black history, it's the same history, and it's totally intertwined.
Now, I know the BCA is a focal point for the community in terms of us learning more about our heritage and our culture, but it's also a safe place for us to go in times of need. And recently we had the Windrush scandal, which unfolded over the last couple of years. And the BCA responded to the scandal and became a hub for support. Could you tell us about some of the things the BCA did to support the community during the height of the Windrush scandal?
Oh, yes. When the scandal broke, in my capacity as the chair of the organization, I went in and I said, right, what can we do? We're going to write letters and all of this to the Home Office and to the government, but what practical thing can we actually do? So I was advised to speak to certain people in the country, and I was directed to Jacqueline McKenzie's law firm, and between us, within days, we put together a program of having surgeries to free pro bono services to help people with their status and Windrush applications. This was in May-June 2018, and we saw about 250 people in that time.
And what has the response been from the community? Because we have heard that the forms can be quite complicated. Are you hearing a lot of good feedback about these surgeries from the community and those who are accessing this service?
Well, yes. I mean, they're coming to us because they need help with completing the forms and in actually establishing their status. And what we are finding is that, people... We've actually held big events, which has included the Home Office coming to say what they do and, that you should ring this particular number and you'll get help from the Home Office. But people are really not very happy about doing that. So they're really not coming forward. But they come to see us because the technicalities of what the issues that they've been through, I don't think the Home Office actually understands. The people that the Home Office employs does not understand the intricacies of some of the people that we see, the difficulties that they have in actually explaining their situation. So they come to us because they trust us at the BCA and they trust the law firm that we're working with.
I've heard that quite a lot when I'm in Brixton and, people say all the time they feel at home when they go to the BCA. They can sort of, once they go through those gates, they can relax.
It's really quite nice because they see people that look like them and they actually see people they haven't seen for years. they meet up. It's typical Caribbean people. At funerals, they meet up. At weddings, they meet up, but at BCA, people meet up. And we have, every strata of the African and Caribbean community comes into the BCA and they feel at home and they can use our facilities. And that's really, we love that we can do that at the BCA.
The BCA is doing its part to help the victims of the Windrush scandal. And we've heard from the government, an apology has been issued. They've also created the Windrush Compensation Scheme, the Windrush Scheme, and we now have a National Windrush Day on June 22nd. Do you think this is enough to right the wrongs of the Windrush scandal? And if not, what more do you think needs to be done?
The Windrush scandal, and we were given this day at the height of the scandal, Windrush Day, which is the 22nd of June. That's fine. It's great to have a Windrush Day, but I just don't think it's sufficient to compensate for the situation that so many people have been put into. And also, there's also, I think, some sort of commemoration statue or something that money has been given for. I don't think that we need that. What we need is some action on the process that's going to actually assist people in being compensated for the suffering that they've had. It's all very nice, having it should be a national holiday, actually. I would campaign for that. But I don't think we need any particular statue at this time. We can always have a statue, but I just think that the Home Office needs to do more to accelerate the pace at which things are going.
Seems really disheartening that after all this time, that it's almost like a second scandal that we're discussing right now, Dawn, that people are still waiting for compensation. People are dying before they're receiving compensation.
Well, it is a scandal. It's a continuing scandal, really. I will say what the community, the Caribbean and African community is doing is now taking upon themselves to do more in that throughout this period, there's been different organizations who have been meeting at the Home Office. It's been called the Advisory Group. Has been meeting at these meetings with the Home Office for the last 18 months, getting nowhere. We've given them a lot of advice, a lot of help, and it just, you know, not getting anywhere with them working directly with these groups of different organizations. So what has happened is that the group of organizations that used to meet with the Home Office have now formed the Windrush National Organization. It was launched on the 22nd of October. And it is really, they're grouping together to actually do the work that the Home Office has so far not been able to actually engage properly with them to get this, to get the work done, to get people coming out, you know, and saying what is, what their problems are. This is what the Windrush National Organization is now going to set up, has now been set up to do. I think, you know, the community, the African and Caribbean, but particularly the Caribbean community, needs to grasp the nettle and actually get the work done and refer the people to the Home Office, because the people themselves are not engaging with speaking to the Home Office directly.
We have seen some action, particularly with our young people, with the recent Black Lives Matter protests. What impact do you think these protests will have on real change in the country?
Well, the Black Lives Movement, I think, has been, I think, has done a huge job in bringing to the attention, but more than it has been in the past, it would appear, that there is racism in this country. The catalogue of deaths of the African Caribbean people in police custody, the disproportionate number of COVID deaths, it's a sort of so many things, the racism experienced on a daily basis, the lack of opportunity available to reach potential in your job, you know, the systematic disparity in many areas of employment, housing and welfare, the mental health issues, the disproportionate number of young men from the African and Caribbean and Asian people in prison and youth crime. You know, the situation is, needs attention. And I have to say that, you know, for once, even the big corporate organizations are thinking, you know, how can we, what can we do? The heritage organizations, what can we do? That's helpful. I've been heartened by the response to the Black Lives Matter movement. And Black Cultural Archives is therefore in solidarity with the Black Lives movement and campaigns with them as it reflects the situation here in the UK.
Looking forward, Dawn, you know, you've done so much amazing work for us over the years. What are your hopes looking forward?
Well, I'm coming to the end of my my time at the BCA because I'm 81 years old now, and I've got a marvelous managing director, Arike Oke, who is brilliant at managing the organization. We have a new board of trustees, all young, absolutely amazing people on our board. And I just want BCA to be able to do the job that Len Garrison wanted when he started this organization, to educate people on the history and heritage of the contribution that the Caribbean and African people have made to this country. I just want them to continue doing that.
And how would you like, or how should the Windrush generation be remembered?
I think we could have the Windrush National Day. The Windrush Day as a holiday, that'd be nice. Yes, I think a national holiday would do the trick.
Now, the Black Cultural Archives is the heartbeat of the community. It's the only national heritage centre dedicated to collecting, preserving and celebrating the histories of African and Caribbean people in Britain. Would you like to see more support and recognition and funding for the work that the BCA has been doing and will continue to do in the future? I mean, the Black Lives Matter movement has highlighted issues that are faced by Black people here, but organizations like the BCA and others have been doing that work for so many years. Would you like to see more recognition for what you have been doing?
Yes, definitely would like to see more recognition being given. I have to say that the Black Lives Movement has woken people up to the fact, which has helped the BCA in that respect, for more recognition to be given. We have so many organizations beating at our door at the moment, wanting to give us money for this and that, and we have to be careful who we can say we can take money from. So, but one thing that we would like is for the government to actually treat the BCA as they treat other national museums in this country, to be recognized by the Arts Council England that, you know, we are of equal value to all these others and to fund us accordingly.
That sounds like another campaign that we should all start and get behind.
But we're working on it. We're working on it very much, yes.
Fantastic. And if people want to get in touch with the BCA, what is your website?
BCAheritage.org.uk.
Thank you so much, Dawn. It's been wonderful speaking to you, and I wish you well on your retirement. I have been speaking to Dawn Hill, who is the current chair of the BCA, and she has been discussing the legacy of the Windrush generation and her hopes for us as the Black community going forward.
Thank you.
So happy to be joined by Windrush campaigner and survivor, Michael Braithwaite. Now, I called you a Windrush survivor because you yourself were caught up in what we now know as the Windrush scandal. I wanted to go back to the start with you, and if you can tell me exactly what happened and how you found yourself caught up in what we now know as the Windrush scandal.
Yeah, okay. So I think for 16 years, I was working in a primary school. I've always had indefinitely to stay in my passport, and I think in that particular time, which was like 2016, when I went to reapply for my DBS, alarm bells started ringing. There was a period of time where I had to regulate my status because of my passport. So I contacted lawyers and stuff like that, and apparently, eventually, they had the HR told me I needed a biometric card because of my passport. My indefinitely to say was not enough information to regulate my status or to say that I was an illegal immigrant. So I contacted my solicitor. We went through a lot of different scenarios. They told me I had to get a biometric card if I wanted to keep my job, as well as my situation in the country might be a bit on the watery side. You know, I could be deported or whatever. The school gave me 3 months to regulate my status. My solicitor and myself were going through a lot of different scenarios. If I'd applied for British citizenship, it would take too long for me to actually maintain my job. So we decided to go for the biometric card. Now, I'm a hoarder of information. I'm the family's hoarder. I just have all the documentation. I've got my mum and dad birth certificates, blah, 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 and so on. And I've accumulated myself since 1973, about information from that, you know, that time in my life. And came to the point we applied for the biometric card. 3 months after, I got a letter from the Home Office saying they needed information from when I first landed in chronological order to the present day. And that's quite impossible. It's impossible. We replied to them, said, well, Michael Braver has got information from the day he landed, 1973. That should be enough to clarify his status to get a biometric card. I think 2 months after, I got another letter asking me for information. So we got a little bit concerned about this. I mean, this is now coming up to 2017. We decided to write a letter to the Home Office demanding that they sort my position out because I've got enough information. I've got enough proof that I've been here so many years, 56 years or whatever. And still that wasn't enough. So it came to 2018, January, February. We were kind of mellowing over what to do next. The Home Office not responding to our calls. We decided to ask if I'd want to go on TV and you know, tell my story, because they've had people gone on before and it was not making any difference to the situation of the Windrush people like myself and people beyond, and younger people who have born here with no real status of being in the country. So I was told by my solicitor to contact the Barbados High Commissioner. We spoke, and he said to me, look, you know, whatever happens, we will back you all the way. I had a call from Amelia Gentleman and a couple of other high-profile people who were fighting this cause. And it was in April when the Channel 4 news people contacted me. I said, would I come? Can they come to my house instead of coming to the studio? So anyway, we did the interview in my house. It was a Thursday, to be precise. I do special needs work with young people, young adolescents. When I came in the Thursday evening, I got a message from Simon Israel saying that they're going to issue me with my biometric card immediately. Friday, I spoke to my solicitors. They were all very overjoyed about having made some kind of progress. Not what we wanted, not just about me. It's about the whole situation of all the Windrush survivors or people who were caught up in it. I received my biometric card the week after because I sent it to my solicitors. The amount of turmoil I went through before, during that period, it was like being in a void or not being recognized. My job was quite a complicated job. I worked with special needs, moderate needs, and some extreme needs. And I've had so much success. Let me take you back. Now, the Friday when I actually was confronted by HR, you know, when I met my HR representation before, the people who had knowledge about the colonies and the colonial Commonwealth, they knew all things about the Commonwealth people. They hired a lot of young people, and they weren't. I don't think they were schooled in understanding people like myself, or they weren't allowed to take that position. The HR person who came to see me, he was not willing to check out my eligibility or who I was or what my contributions were. Or, you know, this was a totally different batch of people, or they were told not to help. They're supposed to get rid of.
That was something that was pointed out in Wendy Williams's review of the Windrush scandal. She said that the Home Office did demonstrate institutional ignorance and thoughtlessness towards the issue and the history of the Windrush generation. And I was going to ask you if that was something that you experienced and you just picked up there and said, you know, they had no recollection of you know, your Windrush journey here. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I'm not a panicky kind of guy. As I've always been brought up by my parents to say, or my grandparents, if you have a dilemma, go back to phase one and work forward. Don't diffuse your natural ability to deal with things. And I've always had that kind of philosophy in my life. You know, I do work with chaos, you know? And I had so much some praise from a lot of people that it actually made me feel very weak and not understanding my worth. But they made me understand my worth because I do my work. I don't look for ticks in the boxes. That's never been my way, you know? And for me to be put in that position that day, I had to have some kind of habit or things to make me feel like I was a human being, because it was just so distraughtful and so damning to my soul, my nature, me as a person. You know, I went into a really dark area inside my head. I wouldn't talk to anyone. I would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and pump up to the park and sit on there all on my own. And looking at the elements, please tell me what I've done wrong. Those were the moments that I could not. I felt so helpless. You know, I don't know if I'm a strong person inside. I don't think strength is something you can gain as you go on through life, through experience. And I had to rely on all my professionalism, not my core, but the things I know that work or put into place to keep me sane. You know, and in those moments, it was the most damning thing to someone. I mean, I still suffer from it now. I still suffer from the uncertainty of my self-esteem, my confidence. It's been damaged. It's been really damaged. You know, and I'm the sort of guy who help anyone. I help people. I like to see, for me, when I work with special needs kids, if they make a slight improvement, I feel so joyous that moment has come that they can step forward slowly. You know, my grandma always told me, you know, like small steps make big mountains or big leaps in the end, you know, and that's how I've always looked at that.
A part of the Windrush scandal that we don't really hear a lot about is the impact on the victims' mental health and their well-being. You know, we hear about the loss of earnings, people losing properties or being wrongfully detained or removed from the country. We don't hear a lot about the impact on people's mental health. And I'm sure so many people listening to this will be able to relate to what you're saying. How do you think the government can, and the Home Office, can right the wrongs of the Windrush scandal? Now, we know they've, you know, they've launched the Windrush scheme, they've launched the Windrush compensation scheme. That in itself has come under great criticism from people applying. And also we have now a National Windrush Day on the 22nd of June. Do you think that's enough? And what would you like to see be done to put everything right in terms of what happened with the Windrush scandal?
Let me go back. I was invited to number 10 on the 17th anniversary of the Windrush. When I actually arrived at number 10, there was a massive queue outside. Now, most of the people who were there were elderly people escorted by their maybe a sister or cousin, or whatever, because they were all in their over 70s, and it was a very hot day. And by the time we got in, it was near, let's come to the end. And I think this is quite strange, because the people who were inside were all the dignitaries and people of standing, you know, and apparently queues, and they were supposed to meet an old lady who was in front of me. I think she was 88 or whatever. And Therese was leaving as we went up the stairs, and it was just a shake hand and how do you do, and left. Now let me bring you forward now to the incident of you talking about the Windrush scandal. The five of us took a petition to number 10. It was more like a plea, if you don't mind me saying so, which I felt really came to that point. We handed in the petition about changes to the Windrush scheme. We were told that they were going to redesign the scheme. All they've changed is the wording, not the actual meaning of change. And we have actually gone back in some ways, as far as I'm concerned, because nothing has really changed. I mean, they said they would change the whole system and, you know, right the wrong of the Windrush scandal and people should not suffer. You know, they're still not paying families who have lost loved ones. You know, I knew 11 people when I first sort of encountered this, that I met during the situation of the Windrush. Sorry, 21, excuse me. And that day at number 10, there were five of us. And when we got there, we felt so, not powerful, but we felt so together. We gave each other strength, believe it or not. I felt strong, and I think we all shared that moment of being together. And we shared a lot of our frustrations, you know, what's the future going to be for us? We're not young people anymore. We're not young. So those 9 or 10 people to be not here anymore, to me, it's a hole in my heart. And, you know, if you look at Paulette, who'd suffer a long, long journey, more than mine, if you don't mind me saying so. I mean, I suffered, but her suffering was something of being torn apart, torn to the left, pulled to the right, detention center, signing on. And her daughter was somebody who, you could see what it's done to her daughter, because, you know, her daughter, Natalie, was there with us. She torture in her face. You could see it, the uncertainty of her mum. I'm fighting for her mum all this journey, you know. And you've got Anthony as well, very quiet. He's got even more quiet. But this thing does not leave you like that. It will take a long time. It might never leave you. You know, and the government is really dragging its heels again, because, you know, the compensation that we hear about being paid out, it's nothing to do with the suffering of people who have lost ground, lost feelings, lost hope. You know, we've gone through history to try and let them understand that. We didn't come here to mess around. My father and people before him and all the people that I knew of my father's age, they were workers. You know, they worked hard to help this country. Because, you know, in the Caribbean growing up, it was a British way.
Do you think the compensation scheme is fair? It's come under so much criticism and scrutiny. People have said it's too overcomplicated. People have said the payouts have been too small. Without disclosing any personal information relating to yourself, and if you have made a claim, what's been your experience of the compensation scheme?
Well, my experience is my solicitors have been kind of monitoring the whole system with who's claiming what the government's been asking for. And they refused to put my claim in until it's the right settlement in a way that suits my situation. But I've known lots of people who have received compensation and they really feel that it's not the right amount for the years of suffering or the loss of family ones. And apparently it's very complicated to fill out on your own. And even solicitors that I've spoken to me said, this is too damning. You know how governments can manipulate situations so they don't give you what you want, what you need, or what you should be given. You know, this is mm-hmm. this has been my speaking to other members of the Windrush. You know, I don't want to tell me how much, but they said it's not right for the suffering they've had. It's still not mm-hmm. coming up to the mark. It doesn't cover everything going back many years.
I mean, that's something we've heard a lot of.
Yeah, I've heard some people who have been so desperate and so destitute that they just had to take it just for survival reasons, you know?
I know in recent months we've seen, you know, the Black Lives Matter protest, which has happened after the murder of George Floyd. As somebody who's been through the Windrush scandal, did these protests make you feel proud that, you know, our young people are finally standing up for something?
It made me feel sad that it took so long for it to be highlighted. I mean, Black Lives Matter. I mean, I'm really saddened at what happened to George Floyd. Why are we not really opening our eyes yet? I mean, they're not even, although they use it, they keep talking about Black Lives Matter, and people are becoming aware of it. I mean, some people who never knew about certain things that happened to Black people because they don't, if you're white, you don't get that journey. You don't have that experience. You know, but this has been going on for so many years. And it took the visionary year, 2020, for something to actually open up, you know. And it, for me, all lives matter. But to use Black Lives Matter as the phrase, it's a true thing, because we do not matter. We never mattered all over the God knows how long we've been here as Black people in the colonial environment that we live in, going back in the years. You know, it took a Black man dying, us to be aware that Black lives do matter.
The traumatic experience you've been through with the Windrush scandal, do you finally feel British? And does Britain feel like home to you?
It's always been my home for so many years. But, you know, during that time and up to now, I'm still not sure of my footing. Honestly, I'm not sure of my footing. You could say I am British in the way I've been brought up, because that's something that I cannot deny that. I am British because of the colonial whatever, or Barbados or whatever. I'm still a British subject in the sense of my journey. But it can make me feel a bit of animosity towards the people who run the place, the people who organise the situation that we are in at the moment, you know? And I'll always be British. You know, Barbados is just an island controlled by the British realm in the times that we lived in. But in my heart, you know, I'd like to know really who I am, because I'm still confused that my roots are my roots. You know, but where are my roots? Where are my original roots? That's what probably would give me more strength or more power as a human being, to know where my grounding was, you know, where my foundation began.
Fascinating stories, as well as, you know, heartbreaking stories in some parts as well, Michael. Lastly, how would you like the Windrush generation to be remembered, and how should they be remembered in your eyes?
For one, I think they should teach it in their schools. They should have it in universities, because it's part of the building of this great land that we live in. You know, we need to have more highlight on the Black people who helped this country, who that made it even more powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael Braithwaite, Windrush survivor and campaigner.
Thank you very, very much. You know, thank you.
You were just listening to Windrush, What's Next? The Struggle for Justice with me, Sinai Flary, and my special guests, Dawn Hill, the current chair of the Black Cultural Archives, and Michael Braithwaite, a Windrush campaigner and survivor. Join me again on episode 5, part 2, where we continue the conversation about racial inequality and Black Lives Matter with Yvonne Field, the founder and CEO of the Ubele Initiative, and Jermaine Jackman, singer-songwriter and political activist.
The Windrush What's Next series is supported by funds from the Paul Hamlin Foundation.